Leviticus 25, verse number 10 says, "Proclaim liberty throughout all the land unto all the inhabitants thereof." This is Pastor Wynn Greer from the Mount Lebanon Baptist Church in Vilas, North Carolina, and we want to welcome you today to the Blessings of Liberty radio broadcast. We hope you're having a good day so far, and we're thankful to be back one more time. I've got a little local information I want to share with you to begin with today. And I was talking with John Alley a while back, and he was telling me about the Military Officers Association and some other groups. They're trying to get together some funds to build a Watauga County Veterans Memorial. This is one of the few counties in the states that does not have something like this, and it's a great thing, a Watauga County Veterans Memorial, to honor the brave men and women who proudly served, are serving, and will serve to protect our freedoms and our great country. And it's a great thing to do that. And let's see, it's in conjunction with the town of Boone, area veterans, organizations, civic groups, local businesses, and ASU is proud to spearhead the project to establish a veterans memorial in Boone, Watauga County. Our purpose is to establish a memorial that will honor our veterans from all wars and conflicts. It will be a reminder of the sacrifices made by brave men and women who have protected our freedoms, and will be a place of reflection and celebration of our national spirit, pride, and heritage. And there's all kinds of ways you can find out more information about that. They have a website, hccmoaa.org. Or you can find them on Facebook. That's probably the main way to communicate now, rather than emailing and websites. You can find about everything on Facebook. I'm sure if you just typed in the Watauga County Veterans Memorial or HCCMOAA, and that's the High Country Chapter of the Military Officers Association of America. And so this is a great thing that's going on, and I'll be telling more about that. I just wanted to mention it today. Didn't have any other announcements going on, but it's good to be in the studio today. Good to see Noah. How's your day so far?
It's going well, and I am glad to be here as well this morning. We do want to say welcome to all those who are listening in right here on AM 1450 WATA and FM 96.5 out of Boone, North Carolina. Those who listen in on AM 690, I'm all jumbled up today. WZAP out of Bristol, Virginia, and our listeners on 89.1 FM, The Truth, out of Watertown, South Dakota.
Don't look at me. I wasn't listening.
Just making sure if I got that one right.
It's easy to get all the numbers jumbled up and mixed up. We do appreciate all of our listeners, no matter where you might be listening, but we know it's probably on the radio.
That's right.
Or online. You know, we've got the archives online, and I'm really surprised. There's a lot of people lets me know that they've tuned in, they've listened, they can't get it on the radio, so they go to our website, mountlebanonbc.org, and listen to the archived radio broadcast. We have been looking at the subject of education now for 17 weeks. This is part number 17, and so that's more than a school semester, or our school semester that we have. And the more I look at it, wow, I'm just learning things. And, you know, as soon as I get done, we'll go on to something else. But I don't know when that'll be. We might just wind up in a week or so. Or we might go a little bit further. But very interesting study to me. And it really helps us understand what is going on in our society. Once upon a time in our country, children were raised by their parents. And we've been looking at the history of education. And just in the past few weeks, we begin looking at modern education. Modern education is vastly different from early American education. Now, we need to understand this. Early education and modern education is very, very different. But modern education is not vastly superior to the way it was 300 years ago in our country. It has changed, but modern education is not superior. In fact, in a lot of ways, It is inferior to the way that it used to be. You say, well, are you saying to go back to the one-room schoolhouse? That's not what I'm saying. But I think we owe it to ourselves as a people and parents and citizens and patriotic people that we would look at this in the light of the Bible, see what is the best, absolute best way to educate our children. In the 17th century, children were raised and educated primarily by their parents, and their education was home-based or family-centered. The school, if they went to a school, it would have probably been a one-room schoolhouse or an academy or maybe a tutor, but it was very, very close into home, and everything centered around the family. And the first and foremost important thing about being educated was to learn to read. And in fact, in the early 1600s, up in the New England states, they passed an act called the Deluder Act. And the Deluder Act was passed and it concerned education. And it said that children, and I'll bring this next week, I think, and read part of it anyway. But basically, it was saying schools need to be enacted to teach children how to read so that they can read the Bible. And if they can read the Bible, they will not be deceived by that old deluder, Satan. And so it was called the Deluder Act because it referred to him. But then schools were primarily centered around the family. The lessons were moral. They were religious. They were practical. You had, and I've mentioned this many times, the three R's, and we joke about that, but they focused on primarily reading, writing, and to be able to do math. Today, the parents, though, and so early on, everything was centered around the parents, but today, parents take a back seat. Where they were at the forefront, now they are the back. They take a back seat to the school. They take a back seat to student peers, meaning all the first graders in the first grade, all the third graders, all the freshmen in the high school, they're peers. They grow up together more around other children their own age than even they do around their own parents. And then another substitute, another thing that has come in there that is modern is the introduction of electronic devices, television. And a few years ago, it was television was the major culprit. But now you have phones, smartphones, computers, even, you go and you look in the gifts for very young children, preschool, and their toys, you might say, are centered around electronics and screens and games on screens and even educational things. But what that is leading into is the computers, the smartphones, and all of those things. I've read several different studies, and, you know, I always think about this when I quote, statistically speaking. Years ago, we had a teacher in school, and I don't think they were original to say this, but they said, figures lie and liars figure. And so you can take statistics and percentages and pretty much make them say anything you want to. Just depends on who you ask and where you look. And I remember they explained how McDonald's could say way back then that they sold over 1 million hamburgers or whatever it was, and they showed us that. But anyway, I've read several different things about parents and their children, and a lot of parents spend less than 30 minutes every day interacting with their children. And I would say in some cases that is not far from the truth. You just think about if a child goes to public school, the school bus goes up by my house somewhere between 7 and 8 o'clock every morning. And it comes back a lot of times in the afternoon between 3 and 4 o'clock, somewhere around in there. And so you just have right there 7 or 8 hours, 5 days a week. That's like a full-time job. And not to mention other activities that go on after school and sports. And even now, you have a lot of travel ball and things like that. And so you have more and more time that children are away from their parents. And then you throw in on top of that the television, the computers, the Facebook and smartphones and Instagram and Snapchat and all of this other stuff that young people are involved in. I read one study that said a typical child will spend more time watching TV than anything else except sleeping. That is a massive amount of time to be spent not under the direct influence of your parents. And so we ask the question, we think about the question, how did this happen in our country? Now, the Bible teaches us, and I referred to this last week, but parents, God gave the responsibility to parents to raise, educate, direct, discipline, train the children. Nowhere did God give that responsibility to anybody else or any other institution. It's not given to the government. It's not given to the state, the teachers union, anybody. It is a responsibility of the parents to raise the children. Ephesians chapter number 6, it talks about children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right, and honor your father and your mother. And it goes on down and it talks about to the fathers to bring them up in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. And specifically there, it's talking about the fathers. And a lot of times we talk about the mothers and that responsibility. The mothers seem to take it up, and the mothers help with the homework, and the mothers do so many things. But the Bible says the fathers are to bring them up in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. Now, thank God for the mothers, and they certainly play a part and should. But the fathers many times should play a larger part in the education of their children. That word nurture there, you find that in Webster's Dictionary, and it means this, that which promotes growth, education, instruction. And so we might look at it like this. As they are younger, we find the mother's nurturing. You know, nature puts the child with the mother, especially when they're very, very young. But as they grow and get older, the fathers should take a part as much as they can in their growth, in their education, in their instruction. And so bring them up in the nurture and admonition. Admonition is something that is missing many times today. In fact, I've heard many people say, I don't know how, and I feel for public school teachers. I don't see how they do it sometimes, because we live in a generation of a generation that does not admonish. By admonish, we mean a gentle reproof, counseling against a fault, instruction in duties, caution, direction. You know, everybody's afraid to make little Johnny mind, to make him sit down. You know, a child that is a troublemaker can just really make trouble, and there's not a lot they can do about it, except for remove them from the place. And sometimes that's even hard to do. But you think about in our country, and I think most everybody would recognize and admit, you know, yeah, it's a whole lot different than it was once upon a time. How in our country did we go from spending all our time pretty much with our parents, with our family, with our extended family, with a church family, to spending just about all of our time talking about our children with their peers, with the school, and with television and other things like that? Well, that did not happen overnight, but it did happen over time, over a long period of time, little by little. And so many things come into our society that once upon a time would have horrified us, but, you know, little by little, people begin to accept it as being normal and being all right, and then as even being the way that it ought to be done. Well, we talked just a little bit, and we'll review some things that we've said. We've been talking about the 1800s, how the 1800s were really a big transitional period from the education in colonial America to modern education. And so early on in the 1800s, you had the beginning of compulsory education. That was laws about going to school. That was where the federal government really began to step in. And from that point forward, and we talked about this last week, that just their influence grew and grew and grew until now the federal government overshadows all of education that goes on. We had in the early 1800s the beginning of the Prussian school model. And that Prussian school model, and Prussia is Germany, but that Prussian school model, that's where kindergarten come from. And we've talked about this several times. The Prussians, they were not, their school model was not to benefit the child, but to benefit the state. And they learned that the earlier they could separate a child from their parents, from their parental influence, from their morals, if they could be the one that would teach the child how to read instead of mother and father teaching the child how to read, that they had a lot more success in delivering, and this is a quote, compliant material to the state. Little citizens that would do what they were told to do, where they were told to do, and would not really ever develop an ability or a desire to think for themselves, but their minds and hearts would be formed the way they wanted them to be formed. And that is exactly what we have in our school system today. Children are removed from the home voluntarily at a very early age. They are taught and raised by strangers. And I'm not throwing off on, I appreciate teachers and all of them that are doing what they can, but they are. They're taught and raised by strangers. They're in kindergarten with one and first grade with another. And then they have different teachers all through, and children like their teachers and they get to know them. But really, what do you know about them? Sometimes not anything. Then years and years ago, and we've said this many, many times, school was home-controlled, God-centered. There was a high rate of literacy. Now, things have changed. Education is state-controlled, man-centered, and there's a high rate of illiteracy. And the 1800s, as we've said, was a transitional time period. We have mentioned that there were many new things that were introduced during the 1800s. You had the introduction of humanism, education, society without God. Basically, that's what that is. Humanism is to worship the work of our own hands, that which our own fingers have made. We are studying, actually, in the book of Isaiah in our Sunday school class at church. And we're in Isaiah chapter 1, 2, 3, along through there. And that was exactly what the Lord, he laid the charge against Israel. They were worshiping a religion that today is humanism. They worship the work of their own hands, that which their own fingers have made. And we were talking last Sunday morning about, you know, they made idols and they worshiped idols, the work of their own hands, that which their own fingers have made. And it was brought up that today man still does the same things, except his idols are much more technologically advanced. You go in any restaurant, you go in the mall, you go in Walmart, and you see everybody on their phone. Everybody, well, you know what I mean. That's hyperbole, extreme exaggeration. You see all these people, and man, they are glued to that thing in their hands, the phone. They can't wait to get on the phone, can't wait to get on Facebook, and all this other stuff. We're still worshiping the work of our own hands. That is humanism. Life, society, education, everything without God. And so humanism was introduced. A lot of the psychology and was introduced at that time. Psychiatry, Freud, and a lot of these ideas that were far into Christianity and what the Bible said. Communism, socialism, evolution is a big one. And I doubt I'll get through this study without taking at least some time to talk about the influence, the evolution, the teaching of evolution exclusively has had upon our children. What I mean, they teach that to the exclusion of everything else. If you lay out creation and evolution side by side, it takes more faith to believe in evolution than it does to believe in the beginning God created the heavens and the earth. And it does not make as much sense as that. But anyway, that's a whole other lesson altogether. But you had all these things introduced. We talked about Horace Mann. Horace Mann is called the father of the modern school movement. Something else that Horace Mann introduced or helped introduce, he used his influence to have it brought in, and it still has an impact today. And we're talking about the lines of the literacy rate actually going down over the years instead of going up. What happened all of a sudden that children were having a hard time learning how to read? Well, you go back to this Horace Mann and this introduction of the modern school movement, the factory schools. And Horace Mann and others at that time introduced what is called the look, say, reading. How to learn to read by looking at a word and saying that word. Sometimes it's called the whole word method of learning to read. Now, the whole word method was invented in the 1830s. A man named Thomas Gauday. And he come up with this as a way to teach deaf students how to read. The deaf students could not hear the sounds used in the phonics approach. Up to that point, people had learned how to read by what we call today phonics. And those who use phonics to teach their children how to read sometimes are made fun of. But phonics is not a new thing. And I did not realize this. I learned something. Phonics was the original way to learn how to read in this country. It was replaced by the look-say method. Webster's Dictionary. And I've talked many, many times about Webster's Dictionary. Webster's Dictionary has a pronunciation, a whole section at the beginning on pronunciation and how to pronounce words. The McGuffey's readers that I've talked about, many of the early readers, they used phonics. Once upon a time, it was very common to, if you bought a Bible, that the proper names, and it would be called a self-pronouncing text. And so if you bought a Bible that had a self-pronouncing text, and they're hard to find now. They're not as common as they were once upon a time. In fact, this whole self-pronouncing anything is hard to find. How come? Because we've begun to teach our children many years ago to learn to read not by using phonics, but by using, just look at the word and say the word. It takes a massive amount of memory to learn to read that way. It's much easier to learn the rules of phonics and how to pronounce words. But a self-pronouncing text means this. For example, in the Bible, all the proper names would be divided. They would be divided into syllables. The different syllables would have accent marks where you put the accent on a word. And the vowel sounds would have marks, long vowel, short vowel. These are called diacritical marks, and they're used to distinguish different sounds. Webster's Dictionary has a whole section on pronunciation and the rules of pronunciation. McGuffey's readers are the same way. I have a couple of those at the house. I was looking back over them. Now, by way of comparison, a lot of people might remember the Dick and Jane readers. The Dick and Jane readers come out in the early 1900s. They relied not on pronunciation, but the Dick and Jane readers relied on seeing the same words over and over again and memorizing. They came out in the early 1900s. After only 5 years, they come to the conclusion that students were having trouble learning to read. Now, the man that wrote the Dick and Jane readers, his name was Dr. William Gray. And he came up with multiple explanations as to why children were all of a sudden having trouble learning how to read. Instead of saying, my books are junk, he come up with all of these, and it sounds like something you would hear people talking about today. He said it was mental deficiency or retardation. Now, this is a man writing in the early 1900s. Mental deficiency, defective vision, auditory deficiencies, congenital word blindness, developmental alexia, and he goes on and on and on describing all of these conditions all of a sudden. That these children, they can't read anymore. What's wrong with them? They've got all these problems now. And now that I look and I see the difference, I believe I can tell you what the problem is. And I experienced this myself when I went to school. When I went to school, I already knew how to read. My mom had taught me how to read and how to pronounce words and how to sound them out. But here's the problem with Dick and Jane. See spot, run me crazy. The problem is they're just boring as dirt. There's no story. There's nothing that would make you want to become a reader and love reading. Yes, you can learn to read that way, but there are better ways to learn to read. Educational problems. I mean, we could go back 100 years in our country, and there's been study after study after study that's talked about, you know, why are we having so many problems? Well, look at the history. Look at the foundation. What happened? In 1955, there was a book published that said Why Johnny Can't Read. And it blamed the look-say method that had been adopted universally and used in the schools. These see spot run, see Dick, see Jane, all this, you know, and we've got, or used to have years ago, some of those books. And, that's the look say method. In 1983, another publication came out by the National Commission on Excellence in Education about the problems of education. It was called A Nation at Risk. And just to summarize quickly what it said the educational foundations of our society have eroded. The problem, they said, was mediocrity. It said if an unfriendly power had done this to our country, it would be viewed as an act of war. As it stands, we have allowed this to happen to ourselves. And so as we look at the clock, we see we're quickly running out of time today. But once upon a time in our country, children were taught to read by using phonics. And you even see the Bible, the self-pronouncing text now. And I think there's been a shift back towards phonics because people just see that it works. But this look, say, reading, that's just one more piece of the puzzle to answer the question, what happened to education in America? Basically, it boils down to this. We quit parenting. Proverbs 22:6, train up a child in the way he should go, and when he is old, he will not depart from it. We have quit parenting in our country. We have turned the duties, the responsibility of raising and educating our children over to the non-expert experts. And so we have a lot of problems when it comes to education in our country. Well, I appreciate you listening in today. Hope you have a great day. Noah's going to give the contact information. God bless.
You've been listening to Blessings of Liberty, brought to you by Pastor Wayne Greer, the Mount Lebanon Baptist Church. It's located in Vilas, North Carolina. If you'd like to contact us, you can reach us through our church phone number at 828-963-4596. That's 828-963-4596, or you can reach us through our church website at mountlebanonbc.org. That's MTLEBANONBC.org.